Rocking out to the theme song there.
Always. So great.
Well, good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, evening. Welcome to MSP Community Live. I'm here with Kyle Spooner, and actually, I feel like just as much of a guest these days as Kyle does. I feel like I'm on here once a month at most. How's it going, Kyle?
It's going. You know, things are moving. Planning a conference, hashtag MSP GeekCon plug. You know, it's just
shameless. You know,
100% shameless. Buy your tickets today.
Should do that, actually. Okay, so Ray is not here, so you're going to have to suffer through me and Kyle, and we have a number of stories queued up today. Really excited to be here, so let's just get right into it. So I haven't read any comments on these. I just looked at the descriptions when we picked some of these out. So we will read along with you. And I guess I need to get closer to the screen because it looks like hieroglyphics from where I'm sitting. Okay, so QBRPT. So this person is asking, what types of things do you guys add into your QBRs, right? So he talks about, they go over the computer inventory, talk about security stack, costs, AI, forward-looking items, cloud servers. There's a couple notable things missing from this list.
So many notable things.
So let's just go down that road. I'll let you go first, Kyle. Like, there's one super obvious thing to me that's missing from this.
This is one of those conversations that's like someone heard you should be doing QBRs and just kind of started doing them without really looking too much into them. Like they started printing off executive reports from their systems and started having conversations. The goal isn't a real business review. It's more of a here's a meeting. Yeah, right, let's just have a meeting, and you know, I can check this off my list as something that other people are doing, so I can add it to my list of feature sets for my services. A real QBR is like fully baked in, like it's a business review. You're reviewing your business and their business and how your partnership works together.
They should call it that.
And you should, like, the whole premise and goal is to make sure that you are aligned with your client and you're aligned with the liaison on what they're doing, what you're doing, and making sure that you're helping guide them to their goals via technology, right? If someone's like, hey, we're looking to possibly onboard 50 people, right? That means they're looking to grow. Ask about their growth, ask about their plans, right? Their company, see how they're doing and see how, hey, look, you know, security is a super focus. You know, I would recommend doing this and this, right? Everyone, like that's a sales pitch. That's not a solving a problem. But if someone's looking at, if they're, you know, regarding to PCI compliance or HIPAA, they're like, hey, look, you know, I understand you guys have this compliance. You know, there's services we can match up with you to help you achieve some of those checkboxes that you have to hit. You know, it's more than just a sales, event. It's a stickiness conversation about how you can ingrain yourself into their business and be their actual trusted technology partner.
Yeah, you nailed it, right? The thing that I thought was missing was, where's the question about what's going on in your client's business, right? Everything in that list is available on a PDF report. You can email them or some kind of dashboard they can log into. There's no value in going over that. In fact, I hope they're seeing that data already, right? This is your chance to say, what's happening in your organization related to technology or not, right? Waiting on the client to ask you to do something from a technical perspective is not really the most efficient way to go. You should be asking what's going on in their business, and your job is to figure out in what way technology can help that. Right now, occasionally a client will say, hey, I need to go down this technical path to meet our business objective. They don't even necessarily know that, right? That's what you're there for. And the other point that Kyle made that I think is so critical is a couple of the things on that list talking about essentially stack alignment, right? Man, clients can see right through that when you go down the line card and say, hey, you're not on this, you should be. Why, right? And the why is because you're trying to upsell them. I don't know about you, I feel like you get one shot at that, right? As soon as they perceive that you're just making recommendations to increase your revenue, you just lost the client trust, right? It's gone. And then you have to make a real recommendation that actually is to their benefit. Not the one listening.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for you to, like, you are their IT provider. Like, they've decided to go with you as an MSP versus hiring someone to do the job for them. So you have to, in these QBRs and in these meetings you can schedule and have, you have to be that internal IT. So if someone's like, hey, you know, oh yeah, we're looking to double next year and we're going to go large, you're like, oh, well, let's hold on a second. The RDS server you guys have utilized, that's not going to keep up with that. We need to start planning what that looks like. That's not a sales pitch. This is going to be a problem when you guys start expanding. Let's put a plan in place to solve it now, even though you're getting all the money for it, right? The goal is to solve their problems and make technology work better for them and not have a burden and make them think that IT is a benefit to their business and not just a cost center.
Yeah, exactly, right? And those items that he mentioned in the post, right? Things like the computer inventory, things like that. If you don't bring it up every single time, right? Maybe bring it up once a quarter or when you say, hey, all of a sudden these machines are about to expire, right? That's when you talk about it, mm-hmm. not every single time this thing is going to turn into a brick in a year. It just becomes noise at that point, right? Highlight it when it's an issue. Don't bring it up every single meeting.
Yeah. I talked to several vendors about like the executive reports that people can provide for different things. And I'm like, no one really, like, so there's two types of reports I recommend that vendors produce. One is an executive summary of the problems that exist. And the other one is a fully detailed, full gamut report of like 10 pages long of all the data that anyone could ever want. 99% of the people are going to want that quick executive summary on what's not working. The other 1% is going to look at the full detailed report. You should not be providing the full details to every system you provide to the client because they're just, it's information overload. They're not going to look, they don't care. But the stuff that's broken that you can help them fix that you've noticed, like phishing, you know, hey, look, John Smith in accounting failed 3 times last quarter. That's a problem. We should, I know you guys want to know that you should probably take care of that because that's a big issue, especially since he's in accounting, right? That's the type of stuff you should be informing and advocating. Not, we sent 800 emails and only 2 people clicked on them. Like, that's not, no one cares, right? It's, they're business people. They have all kinds of stuff on their mind. Adding additional useless information to them, it's useless. Like, they don't care how many emails you sent. They just care that they're protected and they're secured and they're training, stuff like that.
I think what happens is a lot of MSPs get into the habit of using the monthly reports to justify their own existence and to show, this is all this stuff we're doing. Let me show you why you're paying us. But that should come out in what you're doing for the client and not the problems they aren't having, right? That everything's working or that the other things that you discussed in the meeting, hey, we talked about doing this expansion and they brought up the RDS server, like Kyle mentioned, that's where you justify your existence, not, hey, we ran these 500 automations, look at all this time. You're supposed to do that, right? That's just table stakes. Mm-hmm. Everything on the executive summary report or anything you send the client needs to be looked at through the lens of, is there some kind of action that the client might take based on what this report changing? If the answer is no, then ditch it, right? You know, give them the option to log into a dashboard if they ever want to drill down into that. But
I'd still probably
make the executive report actionable.
Yeah, I'd still probably send it because I know people might get curious at some point. Like, it's there, right? It's less about they don't have to worry about logins and I can just send them. Like, I just feel like it decomplicates some things. But yeah, absolutely, right? The goal is to build a relationship, not build a sales pipeline, even though that's exactly what it is. Like, you're 100%, like, don't get me wrong, it is a sales pipeline, but you have to approach it as if it's not a sales pipeline.
It's such a subtle difference, right? And I wish there was a word for it, but I always describe it as the client can so quickly tell when the real objective is sales, and you just lose all credibility. And you can say almost the exact same thing with different intention, and they know, right? They can tell whether it's a genuine attempt to help them or if it's just something you're pulling out of the air just to say buy stuff.
Yeah. So and I struggled with this. So I was moved into a VCIO position, which did QBRs at my MSP, and it didn't exist prior to me taking on the role, and I struggled with what to include, what conversations to have, all of that, and it seems like a daunting task, especially for one who's technical minded, not someone who's sales minded. But it just became. This is what are you seeing with us? Here's what we're seeing with you. Here's some, like, John Smith in accounting opened 800 tickets last quarter when the next closest person was like 20. Why is John, right. Like, what is the problem here that we can help rectify so that you aren't, so John Smith can continue to work effectively without having to constantly open tickets? What is the issue? Like, stuff like that, you know. Diving into the root cause of your partnership and, you know, problems in there and fixing those and working towards the greater good, which is you benefiting and your client growing so that you can continue to benefit, because the more your client grows, the more seats you get, the more money you make. Like it's a win-win for everybody. And if you approach it in the correct way and not just a way to make money, because you can build real general friendships from this type of stuff too. Like, especially if you have local clients that you go and do these regularly with, you can, like, that type of stuff lasts much longer than the meeting itself. So
it lasts past the meeting. It lasts past the job, right? I still keep in touch with some of my former clients, and I'm not an MSP anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've beaten this one to death, although we probably could talk about it more. Simon, can we see the comments? I'm curious what's other suggestions were, if they match what we just said.
Let's see.
Nice. Update on your business.
Mm-hmm. Update on your business. Project road mapping.
Did you see somebody put risk register in there? Man, I wish we still had Reddit gold so we could give gold to that.
Yeah. See, like you're reviewing reports is just, it's, they don't want to be there just as much as you don't want to sit there and talk about the same reports, the information that's in your hand, right? If you're having a meeting to talk about something that someone else can read on their own time, then it's a useless meeting.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that's good.
This is good. This is a, I don't want to say surprising, but I'm impressed with the comments here. I usually don't agree with all of them.
Yep.
Oh, well, Dean, of course, we don't agree with him.
No, he's just a flat out no. Everything he says, I do the opposite of specifically.
Oh, nice. Okay.
All right. So what do we have next on the list?
Yeah, I think we can move on.
All right. So I think the next one is, customer requesting access to cloud managed resources. We have a customer with no current monthly spend with us. We're not on great terms with them, but they need us once every few months or so. We installed a bunch of Unify switches and APs, and now they're live in our Ubiquiti hosted cloud controller. They do not have a cloud key gateway or any other on-prem controller. This customer now has an internal IT person who wants access to their site. They want credentials because it's their hardware. While that's true, I could technically make them an admin of only their site. It's something I don't feel comfortable with because we're paying for the hosting and their internal IT guy is incredibly incompetent. What would you do?
Oh, my God. Where do you even start with this?
Oh, it's simple. Give them, like, migrate them to their own Ubiquiti cloud environment.
It's their stuff.
Yeah, I mean... Well, let that great here. In order to, it's simple. Hey, in order to give you access to your systems, we have to migrate you to your own Ubiquiti systems, in a cloud hosted environment. Feel free to register and create an account, and we'll begin the migration. Like, from what I don't use Ubiquiti personally, but from what I understand, you can pretty easily migrate stuff across environments.
Do you know what's weird about this, though? He said there's no monthly spend from them. So are they just giving away
hosting?
Access to their cloud controller? That is strange. I think this raises a bigger general point, though, and I picked it just based on the headline without even reading the full question yet. I'm a big proponent of not having anything that the client doesn't have access to, right? It's their stuff. And I see all the time examples of an MSP holding the DNS records hostage or, you know, withholding access to the admin password over a billing dispute or something like that. And this idea of using access to resources or access to credentials as some type of negotiation tactic just doesn't really sit well with me, yeah. Right? That's a contract and legal issue, yep. As opposed to some kind of relationship billing problem, right? It's their stuff. I also don't really like hosting client DNS records for them for that reason. It always felt weird to me when an organization like transfers it to their own account. I prefer to have the login to the client's account on whatever register they're using.
It depends, because that, you know, for large MSPs, that can become quite cumbersome to have a login to each individual DNS provider for each individual client. That can get real messy real quick. I think it just really depends on what the client wants to do and if you handle DNS records, like if how confident you feel in making sure they're billed properly and there's a credit card attached to them so that they can auto renew and stuff like that. But that one, I don't necessarily, it was kind of like, but absolutely. Like in this case, you're paying for the systems and access in the cloud. And like, what is the, why you're doing nothing for them. They come to you occasionally and now, they want access. Why just give them access? It's their system.
Right. Well, and so not only, you know, is there a revenue concern here and that they're not getting paid for this hosting, it's probably minimal, right? I'm sure there's not any severe tax on the cloud controller from having one additional customer in there. What this also tells me is that there's likely no MSA between them and this customer, right? And so if they decide to intentionally or even accidentally destroy the environment one day, like they upgrade and it fails, are there any potential SLA concerns when the customer's Wi-Fi goes down? Or is there anything spelled out about how that's handled? Yep. To me, this just seems very dangerous from a couple of angles.
Yeah, the liability is all on the MSP in this case, because there's no contract stating, hey, look, if something happens and something goes down, we'll get it up in X time. Right now, if something goes down, they brick something, they're coming after the MSP. They're not going after Ubiquiti. They're not going after Unify, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to, yeah, it's, I wouldn't want to touch that one.
I would get away from this whole model. And hopefully this is just some outlier and there's not a lot of clients like that.
Yeah, I get the like Rackspace exchange type situation where like Rackspace hosts like everyone's exchange on a VPS. It just feels gross.
Hopefully not literally after Rackspace had that ransomware incident.
I don't know what they've changed since. But that's the same vibe I get from this situation, is that that similar scenario. But yeah, off. Migrate. Yesterday.
Yeah, get away from that. Was that the top comment? I
hope so. Yeah. Get it off your controller before something happens and they blame you.
Yeah, I'm for that if it wasn't. All right. Can move on.
All right. Let's see. What is your best advice / change that you made when growing from small to medium or medium to large size MSP? The MSP I'm a part of is now proliferating and we're moving from small to medium, running into your typical growth pain points. And so what helped you through? What process or change did you implement that felt great? And on the other end, what could you have done better?
Ooh.
This is a good question because all of the answers are right. Right. Every single one of them. Because the problem is, And I like to refer to MSPs as snowflakes, not in the mean sense, but as they're unique. They have different processes, different procedures. They may sell the same products, but how they do things is always different in some capacity. So what worked for MSPA, even though the very similar to MSPB, will not work for MSPB. So the issue is you need to look and see where your pain points are and work to resolve those. Is it meetings? Like, is communication a problem? Do you need to work on having scheduled meetings at specific points and times to make sure that information is communicated and passed correctly? Is it support issues? Like, are you overloaded? Do you need more help? Like, you know, or do you not have information to tell you if you're overloaded or need help? Do you need to develop KPIs to look for things that, you know, you can look for in your business that are problems? Like, what is the actual pain points? Because I think that is the critical piece of information that's missing. Growth is growth. Everyone's going to have it. And what solves those, what fixes those problems may not be the same.
It may not be the same. I think, though, that there are some general benefits to scale that you start getting that do apply to most organizations, not all. One of the big ones for us when we started getting big was the ability to start hyper-specializing in that we stopped being that guy who's the sysadmin and the account manager and the security guy and the internal IT guy, right? You started being able to dedicate individuals to some of these roles, and it really helped to strengthen each of those functions, right? So once we had someone whose job was internal IT and only internal IT, that got a lot better and more structured. And once we had someone who was dedicated only to technical guidance or architecture or writing project proposals, each of those things that became separated out, the quality improved significantly, of course, because that person could spend their time getting good at that particular area they were involved in. And it's something you can't really do when you're smaller unless you have unless you have enough work just to justify it. Like, we didn't until we were very big. It didn't make sense to have someone managing our internal systems, right? It was not a full-time job until there were enough internal systems to manage. But the formality that started coming from that really, really benefited the organization in that it started to feel more like a real business, for lack of a better term, right? It didn't feel like we were just in the old house that we started this thing in and everyone was just trying to make it work. You felt like you had individual departments. And the downside, of course, was that you start going down this road and you realize that, yeah, our policies and procedures are not up to snuff. We have to write all these processes and get all that figured out. The stuff that works when you're small doesn't when you're big, right? So there's a lot of downsides to growth as well. And maybe you could look at that as a benefit, right? You're forced to get that stuff under control or you just won't succeed.
Exactly. There's multiple levels of growth. Like, small to medium doesn't mean much. Like, what, there's no quantification of that. 5 to 10 employees is going to operate differently than 10 to 20 employees. And the higher you go, the different things that happened and what worked at that level is not going to work at a different level. You have to make sure that your processes, procedures, your systems scale with you. And it's okay. Like, this is, I always advocate, like, iteration is like a thing I've constantly pushed for. Iteration. And there's been constant conversation about, you know, you should evaluate your stack and make sure everything is good. And you should see if there's a new product you might need. But you also need to do that and evaluate your processes, your procedures, your internal stuff, because that also needs to be iterated. That, you know, you may be wasting 20 minutes doing this stupid process that you needed to do when you were a 2-person company. But as a 20-person mm-hmm. company, you know, you're just wasting money because it's not needed because it's covered by something else now. And it's super important to go back and reevaluate those regularly, not just because you grew, but because the market changes, things change, clients change. Like, so much evolves and moves in the world, not just the MSP space, that you need to make sure that you're going on and reviewing everything and everyone inside the company on an iterative basis to make sure that you're still efficient.
Yeah, and to that point, right, the idea of 0 to 1, you don't have to the day you become big, right? Let's say you merge and now you're a much bigger company. You don't have to have all of your procedures and processes fixed and figured out day one. What you have to do is start moving in that direction, and you'll never actually get there to the point that you're completely satisfied with everything, but just continue getting better and better and making incremental improvements, and you'll be a lot further off by the time you're done or by the time you look up a year from now.
It's always that's a frustration point for me. Like when I'm traveling or when I'm doing something, if I'm not making progress, even if it's an inch, I feel better because things are moving. I'm moving forward and I'm not just wasting time or wasting space. Progress is progress and progress is important. What is it? Slow is fast and fast is that's a specific saying, I forget it. But it's basically going slow means you're going to go fast. Ultimately, and you need to make sure that you're progressing slowly enough, but fast enough that, you know, you can see the changes, you can make adjustments on the fly. But there is business growth. Like you may have to redo your whole accounting system because you dump everything into managed services bucket in your accounting, and now you want to know where your money's actually going to, what clients are going to where, what type of work you're doing is going to where. Like there's all kinds of different business aspects that you'd need to reevaluate and make sure what you're doing is what you need to be doing. And just because it worked yesterday doesn't necessarily mean it needs to continue to stay that way.
Right. And you don't have to wake up and have your perfect accounting system figured out. You have to have the one that's better than what you were using yesterday figured out.
Just make progress. Like it could be a side project, you know, that you work on an hour a week or an hour a month where you redesign where your accounting buckets go, and you start looking for a CFO, you know, you start looking for part-time assistance with this, you start building a projects department, you start building an automation proactive department, you start working on different areas, and you start, maybe I don't need this expensive package for this product that I can now just hire someone to help do and automate that I don't need anymore. Stuff like there's so much things that you can just reevaluate. It's just as you grow, you need to constantly reevaluate most aspects of your business.
So I feel like as technical people, I don't know if you struggle with this, but I do still. I have this tendency to not want to release anything until it is completely vetted out and done, right? If I have an idea for an automation or for a new program internally or whatever I'm working on, not a ConnectWise, in my previous life, it would be, I would go and develop the entire thing in stealth and then release it when it was ready to go, all nuances figured out, all the edge cases worked around. And what usually happened is that a promising idea would get 80% of the way done on my desk and then die because I couldn't figure out the last 20%. And I think that's almost a universal thing that we struggle with as technical people, or at least most people I talk to seem to have some issue with that. Do you still run into that, or have you figured out how to get over it?
I actually don't have that issue. I do have, so I'm deep into the business side more so than the technical side nowadays. So I've kind of evolved a little bit in that area. Because designing process and procedures and how the workflow works, you can't, there's always going to be exceptions. There's always going to be stuff you miss. So you just kind of have to have it ingrained already that what you release and what you put out is going to have to be edited. And adopting the mindset of iteration should alter that thinking because you know you're going to iterate. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be when it gets released. It may be 2 years from now. But it's going to have to be iterated on. So whatever you release is never going to be done. So I get into the habit of having conversations, getting it to where I feel like I'm done with the majority of the work. And now I'm missing all of the edge cases and all of the nuances that I didn't think of or the people I talked to didn't think of. So now I'm going to have a few people test it and then I'm going to release it. Because I'm going to try to make it as the most stable system, code, process, procedure, automation that I can. And then with the understanding that I know I'm going to, that's going to have bugs. I know that it's going to have something that I missed and slap myself later and be like, why didn't I think of that? But I adopt that mindset before I even start working on anything.
It's just me.
Well, no, I mean, it's common. Like I used to,
yeah.
I have very many unfinished projects, and that I could pull up today and look at, code that's no longer relevant, systems that are no longer relevant because I never got them to a point to where I could publicly put them out there.
But yeah.
It's just understanding the iteration requirements of anything, and just, I guess, adopting that mindset means that it's never done. So if it's never done, either you don't start it or you just release it as when you feel like you get more information from others than you can from yourself.
All right. So you heard it here. Release early and iterate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things don't iterate. It's so frustrating. So many applications exist. I will say, as an asterisk, you can iterate too much. So just be careful with that. I'll take a look at Microsoft's Outlook, for instance. I got like 6 versions of Outlook because they iterate like every other day. And none of them work well.
So yeah, that's true. There is no need to like completely start over. See, that's such a good point. I don't know how often, you know, we'll like find that exception, that edge case, and someone says, well, we're going to start over on this process. And the reality is you just have to go deal with that one issue, right? And you may never see it again. It doesn't even have to necessarily be addressed in the process. It's just an exception. Just deal with it one off.
It's interesting because like I get a lot of complaints about process and procedure and how we don't need it or it's dumb or it's too complicated. And my always retort to that is process and procedure are a requirement. But what you're focusing on is not the important part. A process and a procedure, the whole reason you have them is so you can standardize the outcome. The outcome of that process and procedure is the important part of any process and procedure. If it's designed to be a repeatable way to have that outcome happen consistently. That is why a process and procedure exists. If you go outside of that process and procedure and the outcome is the same, unless you interfere with another process and procedure or something security related or, you know, problem, right? No one will care because the outcome is the important part. The edge case is going to happen. So if you have to go outside the process of procedure to still get the outcome, that's all we're looking for. That's all we measure.
So this is a really important point that it gets into trusting your employees enough. How often are you doing something and you say, okay, this is an edge case. I need to take the process and, you know, crumple it up, throw it in the recycle bin because of the specific unique circumstances I'm dealing with right now. And in some organizations, they get so hung up on this person didn't follow the steps as outlined 1 through 10 that the focus becomes on that, not did this ultimately work or get the client what they needed or meet the objective. And it's a sign that you don't trust your employees enough, right? Trusted employees, you don't even think twice if they go outside the process, and that needs to be for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I you have to build that trust though. Like there is like, again, it's to demonstrate a repeatable outcome, and newer employees like is a great example of this, right? You don't know what to do. So you're given a procedure and a process to follow so that you can achieve the outcome we're looking to get, right? Consistently. And that's why we put these guardrails up so that you can do your job effectively without us having to constantly handhold you. And so you feel more confident in your ability to do stuff. And then once you get your bearings, once you get settled and you start understanding the nuances of the business and the nuances of the clients, making a judgment call to go outside the process to achieve the outcome is less frowned upon unless you break something else.
Yeah. Okay. I think we can move on. Did we look at the comments on this one already?
We don't need to look at the comments. I'm good.
You're good? Did you read them already? They're bad?
No, they're fine. They're the same things we said. focus on leadership, focus on changes, make sure you have sales stack, make sure you adhere to standards, stuff like that.
All right, let's move on.
Managed firewall or network offerings. For companies that have a managed firewall or managed network offerings, how do you structure the offering? Do you flat rate a monthly fee? Do you cover XYZ under the monthly fee? And everything outside of that scope is billable. The company I work for is pretty niche, a specialty. We don't get into desktop server support or user-based all-you-can-eat pricing or anything. Our contracts are some things like managed firewall are ancient for many customers, 10 years old. They're with really no defined scope and monthly rates are all over the place with no apparent rhyme or reason. We're losing our shirt on some of these contracts and we're trying to modernize all of them. Some people are pushing just for a single flat rate for every customer to make it easy. But our customers range from 5 hours a year to 70 hours a year. So the single rate doesn't make sense to me. It's interesting. This is basically to me like a hardware as a service.
Yes. Plus I think it sounds aspect. Like they're doing exactly right. I think that you just answered the question by asking the question in that this is almost two combined things, because they're, to me, when you hear managed firewall, usually that's not a very expensive thing. It's usually just having the firewall and doing things like firmware updates and, you know, that kind of thing as far as the actual firewall. But in a lot of organizations, changes to the firewall end up being part of regular managed services, right? The firewall is just kind of billed as a monthly item that you keep up to date and deal with it if it breaks or anything like that. It sounds like this organization combined managing the firewall, managing the hardware with operational configuration changes on the one flat month. And it's the only way I could think of spending that much time per month on a firewall.
Yes, that's my my immediate hang up is why are you spending any hours a month on a managed network? What are they constantly having to do that you're having to spend that amount of time? They don't release patches and firewall updates that constantly, I don't believe. They're not Fortnite updating. Fair. 40 updates. And some of these systems auto update, like Ubiquiti and Unify have a system built in that will auto push it out. You can turn on. I'm sure other vendors have that as well. I don't understand the amount of work that you're doing. A network, are you moving people? Are you a network in general just doesn't seem that, aside from updating stuff, doesn't need that much time.
It's got to be config changes and troubleshooting got combined into them. And that can make sense if you price it that way. But it seems like they priced it for monitoring and updating and that kind of managed firewall service. And then said, oh, yeah, we'll cover config changes on this too. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, again, how many changes? I can probably count on my one hand how many firewall changes I've made per client.
So it depends on the environment, right? And the type of client. I know when I was doing network work pre-MSP at a larger organization, there were internal network changes all day, every day. Maybe it's some big org.
Yeah, but at that point, you're not charging. That doesn't.
Yeah, it's not $200 a month.
Yeah, that's not a. I have questions that I think need to be answered before I can provide a valuable feedback.
Yeah, what's in scope for what is your managed firewall offering work or managed network? See, managed network to me, that seems different, right? That's okay. That's obviously including troubleshooting, config changes, and things like that. And I would hope it's priced enough that you took, okay, how many hours do we normally spend on this stuff and factor that into the pricing so you're not losing your shirt.
But this goes back to managed services too. If a client is using you constantly, if they're putting in 200 hours of troubleshooting work, right, you need to be able to measure and evaluate why they're spending that much time. There's no difference.
There's some bigger issue there.
Yeah, this is I'm highly concerned. Because this doesn't seem like a one-off client either. Like, I can see if they had like a Microsoft type client where they have like a bajillion networks and they probably have a IPv4 block by themselves internally to navigate and do DHCP, DNS routing and subnetting and all kinds of crazy stuff. But
I had one that was like this. But to your point, so they put in tons of networking tickets all the time. And to your point before, it was a sign that we had to go rebuild the way that their network was structured. And that's what we ended up doing as a project. And guess what? The networking stuff dropped off. And even then, we never would have offered them managed networking with unlimited troubleshooting, right? That ended up part of their managed services agreement.
Yeah. I mean, definitely niche, definitely specialty, but...
What were the comments on this? Were they asking the same questions or were there assumptions made?
It's very weird. Like it's talk to your vendor partner. You can replace your firewall. Cool. It doesn't like, that's not the problem. The problem is you're spending too much time on your clients.
Yeah.
Profitability to go down.
They must be assuming it's troubleshooting work on the devices itself.
They're not asking the real questions. Like someone
no one has asked, what are you spending time on yet?
Yeah. But yeah, this is, they're not asking the real questions.
Vendor recommendation. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, cool. Like they might help you with some things like automating updates and config change backups and stuff like that. But it doesn't really, like the root cause isn't identified.
Yeah, no one has asked the question in here of what is happening on these 10 hours a month. I think everyone's making the assumption that it's some kind of hardware troubleshooting.
Well, I think they focused on the fact that they're ancient firewalls. But that doesn't matter. Like, okay, cool. Like the firewall's old. If you're spending 10 months because the firewall is 10 hours a month because the firewall is old, then you have your root cause of why you're spending 10 hours. And should you replace that?
Right. And even that doesn't make sense because if you're usually in a managed firewall service like this, the cost of the device gets included in these, right? So you would just
rip
that thing out.
Right. The hardware as a service part of that, you just put a new firewall in, like you update it when they go out. So
that's weird. I thought, yeah. So when I saw the headline, and the reason I said this might be a good topic is I thought it would be asking a question that doesn't come up frequently enough, which is what's actually in your managed firewall offering, right? Because it gets touted to clients as like this big thing, but for the most part, it's really just keeping them up to date and dealing with problems that come up.
Yeah, at this point, like, I don't... I just lump it all together. Like the amount of networking work that I've known in the two MSPs I've been at just wasn't enough to be concerned about. And if it was, there was underlying problems, like the network was too complicated for the systems or they had too many, they had Wi-Fi access points.
So you would do the hardware as a service just as a way to have your standard firewall in there as a separate item.
Pretty
and then
much.
Any work on it
it's
was
just
under
managed
the rest
services.
Of the agreement.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. No, we're almost at the top of the hour. The audience survived having to listen to me and Kyle without Ray. So before we break, I think you already mentioned it. Anything else you want to mention and let the audience know about that might be coming up soon?
I am involved in planning a conference. I don't know if I mentioned that before. MSP GeekCon, run by a nonprofit. Our whole premise and our whole goal is education surrounding the MSP as a whole. It's a conference that's really geared towards the technicians, the service managers, and the security guys, the project engineers, all of those around it. That's all we care about, education. The goal isn't to make money. The goal isn't to sell you anything. I don't have any, like my keynote speech, I don't have anything. I don't have any products to pitch. I barely know what I'm going to say. So that's going to be fun to filter out. but yeah, it's an event specifically geared towards MSPs, designed for the technicians and those around them. If owners want to come, that's cool. Although it's not specifically geared towards them. We're not doing a whole lot of business coaching. We're doing how to be a better technician, how to be a better service manager, all kinds of great stuff like that. Our agenda is up on the website if you at mspgeekcon.com. If you're interested in some of the stuff we're doing, we have our sessions available. It's really, really good experience provided by not only those in the community, such as yourself. I believe, aren't you doing a session?
Yes.
What's your session about?
It is about the troubleshooting process and mindset of how to think through problem solving.
That is fantastic and amazing. And it should be on everyone's radar. That type of stuff is, it's around, but it's not centralized and it's not specifically geared towards MSPs that I've seen in the conferences I've been to. I'm not saying they don't exist because they obviously do, right? I don't want to upset anyone, right? So it's a nonprofit putting on an event for MSPs. It's all about education.
No, it's a great event. I was at it last year. I had a great time and continually talk about how it's a different kind of event because it's community driven. I really enjoyed going to it. However, I also need to plug my upcoming event. ConnectWise has IT Nation Secure coming up. This one is all security focused. So as opposed to the general MSP and business focus, IT Nation Secure, June 3rd through 5th. Registration is open now, and this is all about cyber, not just about ConnectWise products, not just about, hey, buy our stuff. There's thought leadership, and my sessions there don't mention product at all. So there's more information about how to be a better security practitioner and elevate you and your clients' security. So in the same way, we don't want this to be the ConnectWise, just buy our stuff show. We want this to be a place to come to get real security education so you can improve your and your clients' environment. So registration is up for that. And it's about a week after or 2 weeks after MSP GeekCon. So I think some people are staying the whole time, right? Staying that extra week in Orlando.
Yep. I definitely did that last year, stayed a week and then went to Secure afterwards. I actually invited the family down for that one. That was a fun time.
Nice.
School was out then, so.
True. All right, well, we're at the bottom of the hour, so thank you as always, Kyle, for coming on, and we'll see you next time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thanks, guys.
Been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.